Years ahead of the dominant media, find out first on FirstAmendmentRadio.com, on satellite, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70.
Roll away the dawn, roll away the dawn, and let me see the land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Never forget!
You're listening to Jackie Patru and Sweet Liberty. And now, here's your host, Jackie Butcher.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us tonight on Sweet Liberty. It is Tuesday, the 18th of January in the year 2005. Alan Watt is with us again tonight. And I want to remind you, and I'll remind you a little bit later if I hope I can remember, in case there are some who turn in late. Jeff Bennett is going to be with us tomorrow night, folks. And as many of you know, Jeff is guest host on our Thursday night broadcast now. He's had a lot of good response, and I've had a lot of comments from many of you saying thank you, because it's refreshing, it's different, and it's better than going off the air, too, isn't it, folks? Because actually that's what we would have been doing. So be sure and tune in tomorrow night. Our spiritual message this evening is from John 18. This is the conversation Jesus was having with Pontius Pilate. And Pontius Pilate asked him if he was a king. Oh, wait, no, let me back up here. This is what I wanted to get first. Pontius Pilate asked him what he had done, because his chief priests, those were the Pharisees, folks, that those are the rabbis of today, by the way, those are the priests of Jehovah that delivered thee unto me. Pontius Pilate said, what have you done? And Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now is my kingdom not from hence. And then Pontius Pilate said, well, are you a king then? Jesus said, you say that I am a king. To this end was I born, and for this cause came I into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. Everyone that is of the truth hears my voice. And I want to go back, Alan, if we could, to the verse before this, where Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world, and if my kingdom were of this world, then would my servants fight that I should not be delivered to the Jews? But now is my kingdom not from hence? There are a few. I can't imagine Jesus referring to any of his followers or disciples as servants.
Yeah.
And that they should fight. That I would not be delivered to the Jews. I don't think the word Jew existed in the Bible at that, or back in those days, did it?
No.
At that time?
No.
And then it says, but now is my kingdom not from hence. And one of the things that people who are very much believing in, oh, there is going to be a second coming, and that's, you know, when Jesus gets here, he'll put his throne will be in Jerusalem, and there will be 1,000 years of peace.
Mm-hmm.
But and the way they justify this one, or understand it, I should say, is he said, now is my kingdom not from hence. In other words, it'll be later. That was it. Would you comment on that?
Yeah, it's, well, again, it's
putting words in his mouth?
Sort of, but it's also tacking on the age. See, every age is given a God figure. And, of course, that was the beginning of the Age of Pisces. And that's why in the New Testament, when he's going to ride into glory on a donkey, he tells them to go and find a young colt tied, and his master will be carrying a pitcher of water, which is Aquarius. That's why that's written like that. So his time of glory would last from then until Aquarius comes.
Until the age of Aquarius.
Yeah. And so the priesthoods had always used somebody or as a martyr figure, but always used the same story for every age in a disguised form.
Wow.
And so, of course, in Egypt you had Osiris and Isis the mother.
And Horus.
And Horus the son, yeah. And eventually they had the Greeks made into Adonis, which is the same thing as Horus. And then that became Adoni of the Jews. They call God generally Adonai.
Am I hearing a dog barking?
Yeah, it's my dog. She's coughing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. She's okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure if that was my girls or you, Maggie.
Yes, it's this one. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry
yeah.
to interrupt that. This deal about my servants.
Yeah.
You know, if my kingdom was of this world, then my servants would fight. That sounds like a made-up thing.
Yes, it is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that you'd find that the rulers, again, who created the Christian movement long after that period had to put in their own spin on things, obviously. But there, in that particular instant, Jesus is symbolizing pure spirit. And, of course, a battle in the physical realm, again, is the physical realm. It's the two worlds, so the one of matter and the one of spirit.
Yes.
And he is showing the way to fulfill the spiritual quest, in other words. That's what the whole story is about. It's a spiritual quest. And the world, in other words, would always be base, because it always was base, and it's still base under all the polish and so on. It's still a very base planet, you know. So the spiritual quest has succumbed, you might say, to the quest in the world of matter for the ownership of more matter. And that's the way it's always been here.
Cycle after cycle after cycle, huh?
Yeah. The first fall of man was into matter. That's what they said in ancient times.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
And I truly wonder, as spiritual beings, why we ever came here in the first place, mm-hmm. unless it was to experiment.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if this is so, but I have read, and it makes sense, that there are spiritual beings that never actually... take flesh, physical flesh.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you know, the only way you can prove something.
I know, seeing it or be there, yeah.
Until you have the proof, and the proof can never be because someone said so.
I know.
And that's how they create the religions that end up lording over us, you might
say. Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Do you, I know that there are a lot of charlatans.
Yeah.
Do you believe that it's possible for people to channel disincarned entities?
Oh yeah, I believe that, but I don't say that these entities generally are what they claim that they are.
Or maybe have any more. I don't know. You know, I've read unless, for example, the Seth material. It was very. Have you ever read that, Alan?
What's it called?
The Seth material.
I don't think so.
Well, it was the information that... Well, never mind. We won't go into it. But it just... I've read a lot of books. And, you know, you've said this yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you read enough books from different sources and there's a thread, that mm-hmm. there's probably truth to it. And maybe the possibility is that there are... disincarnate entities that mean no harm, and that are bringing through some information to help mankind. Why couldn't that be a possibility?
Generally, you'll find it's the same messages, though. And of course, in the 60s, there's a whole myriad of groups came out of the human potential movement.
The what?
The human potential movement.
Okay,
called it.
I don't know about that.
It was pushed by the Rockefellers and all the big boys.
Well, were they doing some harmful work?
Well, what it was to do was to actually get people into this whole thing of channeling, basically.
Well, I would think that would be very, very dangerous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're bringing something into you
and
you're taking its word that it is what it says it is.
Right.
And you're opening up a doorway which it can then come in any time it wishes to.
Mm-hmm.
And I've no doubt on that because and that's something I don't believe. It's something I've experienced in other people.
Uh-huh.
Which I couldn't deny. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's no scientific explanation, but I've seen people, you might say, possessed. Yeah.
That you could actually see that it wasn't them when they were talking or...
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. I couldn't contradict it, couldn't deny it, and there was no scientific explanation for it. And when you study Masonry and all of the groups, including the higher Wiccanism, all of the groups that are running the show today, basically, in religion, they're all into channeling entities. And the higher Masons do this, they channel.
Do they?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Well, and you did, we talked about this on the air, didn't we?
Mm-hmm.
About the high Masons who actually receive an entity to share their physical body.
Yeah, and the high degrees, the very high degrees they do, yeah.
I'll bet there are some that don't have to be in high degrees of Masonry.
No, you'll see it in some of the lower people, too. But, and you find it in people who are not as well in Masonry, but Masonry in its higher levels actually encourages it, yeah.
And you had told us, and I think you touched on it one night, but it's been quite a while ago,
uh-huh.
And maybe you could address this again, that we're on kind of on this track, the pyramid that they have set up where they're doing, do you recall, do you know what I'm talking about?
The triangle.
The triangle, thank
yeah.
you.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that again, would you? Explain
yeah,
it again?
One of the biggest groups that led this movement, Masonic groups, again, promoted by the Rockefeller Foundation heavily, was Theosophy. And they set up triangles, large ones and smaller ones within, where they will meet in certain lodges in different parts of the map and form these triangles and literally meditate their will upon all the inhabitants contained therein.
Uh-huh. And I think it's important, hopefully for our listeners, folks, think about this. What Alan is telling us and realize that these people at the top have the secrets of the ages, you might say, and they're very well aware of the power that resides. See, but it isn't just they who have this power. It is each and every one of us if we access it. And so not to have this be so seeming so far out of bounds,
mm-hmm.
because Jesus said it in many ways, Alan.
Yeah.
He said it in many ways. The kingdom of God, number one, the kingdom of God is within you. Ye are the light of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, it brings back to mind the importance for us to the way we be. You said this several years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It is up to each and every individual because everything we do, everything we say, everything we think is impacting not just this physical realm but every dimension.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. The higher Masons, when they're talking about changes or changes in society, major changes, they'll call it the spirit of the age. And the spirit of the age is basically the form, this sort of mental psychic form they create, also through propaganda and TV and media and so on, to promote these things. But they, in other words, they give you the in thing to do, the trendy way to be for this particular period, the spirit of the age, and they claim that they force their will to do so. You know, I've actually got a tape where Rockefeller talks about this. You know. But all of the parts of the changes of society and the directions that we are going into are all calculated prior to the public ever hearing of them or seeing them implemented, and they're willed into existence, basically.
Yes, of course, they have a little help, don't they, Alan, with
their
technology, their control of education, entertainment, the media,
yes.
Governments, the monetary economic system.
Yes.
They've got a little bit of... but it's all on the material level.
That's right, and think tanks, lots of think tanks.
Oh, they're think tanks, yes. And the one thing I do know is that there is no power in this world greater than the power of Creator.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, it doesn't mean that they're going to be successful. It appears right now that
they always seem
on the road
to
success.
The brink. Yeah, they get to the brink of dominance. There's a truth here within even the ancient mysteries that contained all of this information long, long ago, that there are, you know, that the world is in a balance. It's like the balance of nature. Things have to be in balance, and when evil tips the scale so much, then something has to give. It cannot simply be successful and stay that way. Eventually, the good has to overtake it and destroy it. And something, of course, that man, or base man, you might say, never learns. The people we are taught to respect in high positions are corrupt people. These are the only people who climb and claw their way up to the high positions because they have a lust for power, which ordinary people cannot fathom. They can't understand it. And so it's presented to the public that they're just there as good public servants, etc. But there's not one face on TV in the line of politics that didn't crave that position. And they'd do anything and say anything to get there.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the problem. In every age, you get top-heavy with dynasties, you might say, ruling dynasties and oligarchies and families, very wealthy, who crave total power, and it literally goes to their heads, and they bring chaos upon the world
in
the process.
One of the a question here or a thought, you mentioned last night that the ancient teaches the ancient mysteries or truth,
mm-hmm.
That we get 10 times around here, and if we aren't in our spiritual consciousness by then the energy that is our in maybe personality, soul, that it just dissipates back into the ethers.
Well, that's a belief that the Hindus have. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
And that's very, very old, because so much of religion, all religions, come from, there's no doubt, there's a connection with India.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, what about these creatures? Do they don't know, they don't understand that the laws of creation are immutable,
mm-hmm.
that as we sow, so shall we reap.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand this?
I would understand it very well.
Well, then...
It's their arrogance. You see, they're so arrogant and sure of themselves, and the more they get away with, you see, the more sure of themselves they are, and it's their nature, and it's in their nature. It's like the old story of crossing on the back of the water on the back of a scorpion, and it promises not to sting you, and you're halfway across and it stings you. When you ask why did it do it, it says it's my nature, and that's the nature of these creatures. They can't, and they really believe that through science and planning and cunningness, they can actually avoid it this time around.
I see.
But it's in their nature, you see. It's no different from someone who's a real hardened drug addict. These people are addicted to power, as you cannot imagine. They have a lust for it, a craving. They think about it night and day. It consumes their entire life. And
how do you know that?
Because simply by studying them. When you really study them,
you get a sense or a feel.
Down through the centuries, you'll see them. You it's the same pattern over and over and over. And these people cannot let go of power. That's why they never retire. They don't say, well, I'm 65, I've got millions of dollars, I'll put my feet up and enjoy myself.
Because they are enjoying themselves.
That's right. They have to be in the limelight, they have to mix with their own kind, they want to have the ordinary people kowtowing to them, and they just lust, and it's an insatiable lust. There's no, you can't say, I'll give you a shot of 100 milligrams of cocaine, and that'll do you. You see? It's an insatiable lust for power that cannot be satisfied. And hence they go
and
the
fame
whole...
And the fame and fortune that come with it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like you said, being out in the limelight.
Yes. Yeah, that's why they cannot retire. You'll see them all in their 80s even, still going around the world giving speeches and so on, you know, heavily involved. They don't retire. Because they're addicted to power, and there's no amount of power would ever satisfy them. That's the problem. Because they're addicts.
Remember that quote long time ago that you made, that Toynbee said?
Yeah.
And basically, it had something to do with the power behind those people that believe they're in power. And to refresh you in case, we were talking about the fact that the ruling force, unseen hand, whatever we would call it, is very clear about the power within all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But these creatures that are doing the work here, the ones, as you said, the ones that are really behind it, we've never even heard their names.
That's right.
They believe that they're gods, and they believe that they will reincarnate right back into the same family.
In the same family,
but we won't.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and do you recall that that statement from Toynbee?
What he was talking about, the power within you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, Toynbee, I mean, Arnold Toynbee was a professor at Oxford University, and he taught the Rhodes Scholars. He taught the Bill Clinton types, you see, for world dominion. That's what the Rhodes Scholarship was set up to do. And
where did you say he was a professor?
Oxford University.
Oxford, okay.
Yeah. Oxford on ISIS, they call it. It's always been called that.
Oxford on ISIS.
Yeah, where the river runs through there, they call it the ISIS.
Okay.
And that goes back to the 11th century. So these guys have been at this for a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, he was giving a speech to world internationalists and communists and so on, and I think the speech was in Denmark in 1932, and he said when a thought is created, an original thought is created, he said it's immediately transmitted across the globe, and certain people will receive it at the same time it's released. And he said, of course, that he said, we know how to use this power. But he was also aware that the masses were ignorant of the fact that they could also do it. And so basically what he was saying was that he and his kind, his ruling elite, as he believed, and he belonged to aristocracy, very old aristocracy, he believed that they literally willed their plan into existence. And those who would help them would pick up their thoughts and work it out, and that's basically what they do, you know.
But the same goes for us.
Yeah, but the public are not supposed to know that.
Yes.
we're supposed to believe that there's nothing except science, and that's why they had to eradicate all the old religions, which, mind you, they also gave you as well. They're defunct now. They've done their job. Now you must believe in nothing but science and the state. The state becomes God. And as long as you believe that, you're imprisoned forever. That's the idea. They don't want the public to know that, that no, this journey is your individual journey as a spiritual being. And no one else can take that from you or show you where you must go. But the second fall of man, according to these same people, the first fall is the fall into matter. And if they wish to fulfill their plan by the second fall, which is to encase man forever in the world of matter.
Uh-huh. And you know, we talked about this. Actually, I remember when it was right around the time of 9/11.
Uh-huh.
We were having a lot of conversations, and in the conversation that we were having was when it occurred to me that when we leave this physical realm, when we come back, we bring back with us what it is we left with. And if they can shorten the lives, and if, in other words, if we've begun on the path, on the journey, let's say, to spiritual consciousness,
mm-hmm.
there is a remembrance. I'm just clear on that because of certain things that I knew when I came, you know, as a little child. There were just things I knew,
mm-hmm.
and so therefore, if they can keep people totally in the lie,
mm-hmm.
and maintain what they have created as a perceived separation
mm-hmm.
between us and Creator,
yeah.
Well, then when we come back, it's the same old thing. It's just it's almost like a computer. You put junk in and you get junk out.
Well, that's what the pharaohs said. The pharaohs claimed it perfected the slave population, so they'd always come back as perfect slaves.
So it's really so, well, critical that we get out of the lie, Alan.
Yeah, and it's not so easy because pretty well everything is nothing but lies.
Yeah.
Ancient history, well, recent history is still being changed by the year with every book that comes out. I just watched a documentary done by the CBC on the now official version of how the free trade agreement came to conclusion.
Yeah.
And I've never seen so much fantasy in my life, you know.
What, would you give us some detail or what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they never went into the fact that the free trade agreement was back to the 1500s. That wasn't mentioned at all. Because when John Dee went to Queen Elizabeth I and talked about the creation of a British or Brightish, he called it, empire, with the free trade between the countries that would join this Commonwealth.
That was course, when?
In the 1500s. And that was never... And the free exchange of labor, because the elite knew they'd have to move the laboring classes into new countries to do manufacturing and clearing the lands and all this stuff. And that was in the 1500s. So the free movement of labor and goods would have to be part of the free trade.
We're going to take a break right here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think. Do you hear the music?
No.
All right. Oh, yes. All right, we're going to be taking a break right now. I'm going to run and grab another glass of water.
Mm-hmm.
And if I don't get back before when the announcement is over, will you please continue with this?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. But don't talk too fast. I don't want to miss anything.
Okay.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com, Galaxy 13, Channel 16, Audio 7.70, and worldwide on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Roll away the dawn.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the Internet at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the sweetliberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Yes, so getting back to this CBC documentary.
Yes, and I'm here, Alan.
Oh, okay. On the free trade agreement, it was presented as though it was the greatest thing that Canadians wanted, and how it all so benefited from it financially. And of course, the way it came about was it just sort of happened to be the right time for it to come into play, and forces sort of pushed it into play, sort of natural forces, and it just sort of happened that way, you know. But in reality, it's utter rubbish. I mean, there was so much scheming went into the creation of the free trade negotiations. It was, as I say, planned with the creation of the British Empire in the 1500s, including, as I say, the free movement of the labouring classes between continents that they'd have to do to clear the lands and so on. And so they're constantly changing history and presenting it to the public, who don't seem to notice, you know. Who, even though they lived through the changes, they don't seem to remember how it really was, even if it was only a few years ago. But the children who go to school haven't a clue. All they're told is this is the official version, and they believe it. So history is always being altered.
Yeah, yes. I've got this book, and I've referenced it before. It's HarperCollins' Atlas of World History.
Mm-hmm.
And on page 70, it's the Jewish diaspora.
Uh-huh.
From A.D. 70 to 1497, Alan.
Yeah.
And this is amazing. I've got a couple highlights, if I may. This is what they've written here. Well, here's a highlight. Well, I'll start with my first highlight. For over 2,000 years, the history of the Jews has been a story of external dispersion and internal cohesion. That's a very telling statement, isn't it?
Yeah.
The political, military, and religious reverses in Judea only affected, to a small extent, the status of Jews in the Roman Empire and the even larger number of Jews living in Babylonia. And then it goes down, the resilience of Judaism after the setback in A.D. 70 may be explained at least in part by the evolution of the Jewish religion following the destruction of the first temple, when a system based on a temple and sacrifices was complemented by one based on the synagogue and prayer. The new religious forms gave influence, listen to this, to the interpreters of biblical law. These new religious forms gave influence to the interpreters of biblical law. The philosophy underlying such interpretation varied. One group of interpreters, the Pharisees, became particularly influential at some time after the middle of the 2nd century B.C., and after A.D. 70, they evolved into rabbis. A second important factor was the codification. Or codification, is that the way it's pronounced, Alan?
Codification.
Codification of Jewish law, both civil and religious, carried out in Palestine around A.D. 200 by Rabbi Judah. I'm going to go down here. Let's see, the Muslim conquest in Spain, 711 A.D., brought a respite, which culminated in the Golden Age of Spanish Jewry. And then it says, from about the 5th century, this changed, and Jews became identified, listen to this, with international and regional trade. International and regional trade. Internal and external factors, including the widespread dispersal of Jews, both in Islamic lands and throughout Christian Europe, the Jewish group solidarity, facility of linguistic communication, and a uniform system of commercial law based on the Talmud accounted for this change. And it said that, it mentions the Carolingian rulers, aware of the Jews' role in international trade, granted them special charters, assuring them of protection, commercial privileges, and the right to govern themselves according to their own laws.
That's right. They still have their own places of where they settled disputes.
Yeah, and that's, you said that was around 1500?
Mm-hmm.
And this is A.D. 70 to 1497, bringing us right into that era, Alan.
Yeah, well, John Dee, I mean, he was a Kabbalist, as was Francis Bacon. They both studied the Kabbalah, and
Are you away from the phone?
No.
Okay.
No. And this again, we're talking about a mystery religion that comes out of Babylon, and it pre-existed Babylonians. It comes down through the centuries like a phoenix bird. You know, it changes its form every 500 years, hides behind different forms, but really it's a small elite behind most of the feathers, you might say. The Phoenicians is a play on the phoenix, see? And one of the capitals in the Middle Ages was Venice, which again, you substitute an F for a V and you have Venice. And again, if you take Venus, the planet, and you chart its course through the heavens over a year, it makes the so-called Star of David. So this was also, the Star of David was never David's star. You find it all the way back through Babylon and all the way back to India.
How did the Jesuits figure into this? Because when you mentioned Venice, I read quite a long thing about their control of trade and commerce in Venice.
Yeah. Well, the Jesuits... They had their PR thing that they started up to fight this new thing created by one of their members, Martin Luther, his Protestant sect.
Was he a Jesuit?
Well, he definitely was a Rosicrucian. In fact, that's on his coat of arms, his family crest, you know, the Rose and Cross.
Martin Luther.
And, of course, the Catholic Church at that time was burning everybody who it didn't like, and... all it did with Martin Luther was call him in for a few questions and let him go. So why did they let him go? It was because it was the right time to create an opposition for the upcoming industrial age and creating the Protestant sect with the Protestant work ethic. That was important.
Jackie? Oh, somebody needs to call Jackie. Tell her we lost the feed. Hello? Jackie?
land of the free. Has anything changed at all? Sweet liberty, sweet liberty is in our hand. It's part of the plan. Or is it a state of mind? Horses and men, horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield. Many have fallen here. Never forget. Never forget what they have done. The time will come when it will change.
There we are. All right, folks, we're back with you. Alan?
Yeah?
I think I know when that happened.
Uh-huh.
Your voice suddenly got real low. I was watching because you've been... Hello there. Hello?
Hi, is this Jackie Petru?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to your broadcast of Alan on the Internet. And
yes.
It says that they lost your feed.
Right, we just called back in, honey, so get back on.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Who is it?
Thank you.
Bye. All right, folks. Thank you so much. That's wonderful. I'm glad that you became your... It was like I heard a click, Alan.
Oh. Okay.
And your voice level went all the way down to the bottom.
Uh-huh.
And I was watching it, and I thought, well, I always get concerned. You remember when I said, are you away from the phone?
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then suddenly I heard a click again. And your voice was so nice and loud again, I thought, well, there we go. And I didn't know that we were disconnected.
Oh, I see.
So anyway, you were talking, and I don't know how much our listeners missed.
Uh-huh.
You were talking about Ignatius Loyola.
He'd been off for about 3 minutes.
Okay.
Three to 4 minutes.
Thanks, Nicholas. We lost about 4 minutes, Alan.
Okay.
So I guess the question I asked you, and I hope our listeners heard this part of it, is where do the Jesuits, you had mentioned Venice, and
yes.
I remember reading some time ago about the control that the Jesuits had over commerce and the economy and et cetera there. And would you repeat what you were telling our listeners?
Yeah, well, Ignatius Loyola was a member of the Alumbrados, the Spanish sect of the Illuminati of his day. And he was captured by the Pope's army, who he'd fought against. And they had him in prison, and then he was granted an audience with the Pope. And after the audience, he walked out as the first head of the Jesuit order. So he was a very powerful man. Obviously, the Pope, being a secret society at the top, understood exactly where this man had come from. And granted them this power. And
exactly where he came from? What do you mean?
Well, for instance, why would a pope grant a man who was a known member of the Alumbrato, the Illuminati sect,
I see.
That came from the Knights Templars? You know,
mm-hmm.
Why would he give him the headship of a brand new powerful order?
So a lot of people say it's the Illuminati behind all this,
mm-hmm.
and yet the Illuminati is part of it, yes?
It's part of it, absolutely.
Like the Jesuits, part. Like all of it, like, you know, Tupper Saucy wrote a book about the Jesuits,
mm-hmm.
and in the book seemed to be very well sourced.
Yeah.
And I was getting so confused. I thought, well, the Jesuits did all this? But it was just one part, one arm, mm-hmm. of this huge tentacle that they have control of, yes?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Absolutely. You must create opposites all the time, and you must always have conflict on the go.
Yeah.
To create the changes that they want and to reap the financial rewards. I mean, wars are terribly lucrative to those who lend the money and carry the shipments and so on. And the Jesuits planned to take down many countries which had become Protestant, and you had 30 years wars going on and 50 year wars in Europe over this Protestant Catholic thing. Very lucrative to certain peoples, you know, very, very lucrative. And so it's all arranged that way. The mystery religion is contained within every authorized religion that we know of, including Buddhism.
Yes, and it doesn't mean that we talked about this, I think, and it's something that I noticed. There are so many. Somebody had written up a paper and was quoting statements allegedly made by the Buddha. Siddhartha, was it? Prince Siddhartha? Mm-hmm. And also Jesus. I mean, all of the masters, these teachers, if you would, that have come into this world to, quote, bear witness unto the truth, they had the same message. And it occurred to me that whatever Buddhism is today, it wouldn't be about the teachings, the real teachings, mm-hmm. the same way that Christianity, they leave a little bit in.
Mm-hmm.
But they all of the religions, it doesn't matter which one it is, they've all been man-made, yes?
Well, that's it. Mystery Babylon was the mystery because it was so hard to exactly say what it was, because it contained all of the religions of its time. It updated all of the religions of its time, and it altered all of the religions of its time. It was also a commercial system incorporated within it, with an ordered bureaucratic system to run the whole show. It's Mystery Babylon was and is today. It's still the same thing today. But when the Buddha died, the sects who got together, and by that time there were many different sects that had minor differences.
Just like the followers of Jesus.
Just like Constantine's big setup. Well, 300 years after he died, they got together and created the official version.
That's
of,
right.
And codified it and put the laws down and the rules and all the rest of it.
For our listeners, that would have been the First Council of Nicaea in... 325 A.D., Alan?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I do have a small book on this. The man that wrote it was done in 1916.
Uh-huh.
And he quoted from the ancient historians back at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the book, in fact, I read a lot of the book to our listeners. It's a little book. I found it in a small little bookstore down in Philly. But... basically, you know, I know that many people, those who have believed that the, quote, Bible or Holy Bible is the divinely inspired Word of God. And if enough people could read that book, when you read the speech that was allegedly given by Constantine there, he was dialoguing those bishops to consensus,
mm-hmm.
is exactly what he did. And they voted, like you said, they came up with what the dogma, what the doctrine was going to be, and anybody that didn't go along with it was anathematized.
Yeah.
And in fact, it did mention Arius there, Bishop Arius, and basically what I could understand that he was teaching was what Jesus taught. He was the Son of God. So he was created, and this is what got him anathematized.
Yeah.
And that we are all the sons of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so Constantine, they ejected him from the church, and they anathematized him, and that means that, you know, he's worthy of being killed. And he was, of course, no longer a bishop, and his information was evidently so critically important that Constantine decreed anybody caught with any of Arius's writings would be put to death.
Mm-hmm.
And Arius was put to death when he was brought back.
He was put to death in love, you see.
Put to death in love?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. When they brought him back and they were going to reinstate him.
And they poisoned him.
Oh, boy. And you know what? Will Durant, in his History of Civilization, in that Caesar and Jesus.
Yeah.
My God, Alan.
Oh, yeah.
He described his death in public.
Yep.
And the man not only evacuated his bowels,
mm-hmm.
but his internal organs, his spleen, his liver,
yep.
right in public. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the lengths that they go to keep truth from
yep.
the people.
Yep.
And, you know, Alan, I hope that our listeners who are listening to this,
mm-hmm.
the last thing in the world that I want to do, and I know that that is so for you, is to discourage people, but that it could be encouraging to be released from the kind of fear that has been promulgated, fear of God, literally fear of God, and anybody would fear that God, Jehovah.
Yep.
But I remember once a long time ago, one of our listeners called in, and he said, if we don't have this to hold on to, what do we have? And I said, the truth.
Yeah.
The truth, Mac. That's what we have to hold on to. And I know that it's hurtful sometimes, but if we really think it out, and we should be grateful and we should be giving thanks that we are beginning to discover
mm-hmm.
the truth.
Yeah, because really, with it becomes a tremendous release. When you understand and you accept the fact that everything's been covered with so many lies for political reasons and for control purposes, that's why organized religions are called organized religion. They're authorized.
They are organized. We don't have too much time left.
Yeah.
I would like to, first of all, folks, I want to remind you that Jeff Bennett will be back with us tomorrow night. Jeff will be with us, not back. He's hasn't been on with us, and of course he is a guest host on Thursday night, so please tune in. I want to give you Alan's address. As I've mentioned, he has the two books available. Now, folks, we talked about this earlier today. I know what the postage costs in Canada. Well, I don't know what it costs. I know that it's very, very high, even worse than here. And Alan said now it is running close to $7 to mail the booklet. And I suggested that, and he said he thought it would be a good idea that rather than $20 to send 25 for each book, because that's what it's costing to mail them. And you must send an international money order. He has received, I don't know if there's been a lot of them, but he has received U.S. postal money orders, and he can't use them, folks. Nor a personal check. So if you want to get the books that he has put together and written, some part of it is his writing, explaining a lot of photocopies from ancient books. And it's so well worth your money and your time. Be sure to send a U.S. postal, or excuse me, an international postal money order. Keeping an eye on the clock here.
You can get it from the post office.
Yeah, you can get it right from the post office. So please remember that, folks. And it'll be $25 for each book. And let me give you his address now. It is Alan Watt, A-L-A-N-W-A-T-T, Watt. It is site, S-I-T-E, site 41, box 4. And that is in Estaire, E-S-T-A-I-R-E, like the stairway, Estaire, with an E on the end, Ontario, and then under that, write Canada. And you have to have your full name, first and last name, and address, or they won't deliver the mail. Alan's phone number, if you would like to have a conversation with him, 705-695-0416. 705-695-0416. And we talked also about, we were talking about mail that we get, and sometimes somebody will write a letter, and they'll spend 8 or 10 or 15 pages. I respect that. And out of that, I try very hard to read. Sometimes the handwriting is almost illegible. And Alan was saying that people do write to him, and they ask him questions. And, of course, it is expected that there's going to be a response. He's working. He's doing it all, besides taking care of his home and et cetera. And it would be much easier for Alan, if you have questions, write a list of questions down and give him a call. You can get a calling card if you don't have international calling. And then there's, I'm going to write this down for tomorrow night because we're running out of time. One Suite is a wonderful phone service, and you can call Canada for 2.9 cents a minute. And we are out of time. Alan, did I forget anything?
Did you give your own address?
Well, that's all right. Nicholas will do that again.
Okay.
Okay, thank you for being with us, and we'll talk to you later. And, folks, thank you for being here. Be sure to join us tomorrow night. And do write my address down when Nicholas gets it to you, because the broadcast only keeps going as long as you want it to. You are the sponsor. Thank you, folks. God bless you. And good night. Good night, Alan.
You have been listening to Jackie Petrou's Sweet Liberty program on the First Amendment Radio Network. This broadcast is also archived and audio streamed on the internet at firstamendmentradio.com. Sweet Liberty is a fully listener-sponsored program. Your donations to support these broadcasts are a necessity. Send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Again, send your check or blank money order to Jackie Petrou, P.O. Box 190, Millerton, PA 16936. Be sure to visit the SweetLiberty.org website. Thank you for your continued support. And stay tuned to FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The opinions expressed...